Beautiful. We got in the room early last year, and we were in there for maybe 5 minutes, and there might have fit 30 people in that room. There was about 120 of us trying to like sit on the floor Indian style and stuff, and finally they said the fire marshal ain't going to go with this, and they kicked us out into a different room. The reason why I'm here, Josh McDowell taught me this, and it's very important for all of us to remember, and then Gary Habermas taught me something else, and it's very important to remember. Josh said, never don't share a part of your testimony no matter where you're at. And that is very powerful because I think in the world of apologetics we get a little bit sidetracked on the intelligence of it, and we speak our intelligence and then we intelligently speak our intelligence and we forget that we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. So I'll give you just a 5-second rundown on that. But I asked Gary Habermas in an interview one time, I said, what advice would you give to an up-and-coming apologist? And he said, don't forget Jesus. So whatever we do this weekend, don't forget why we're here. Father God, we just come to you right now. And Lord, we lift up this time to you. And Lord, we lift up this weekend. Father, build your kingdom strong in the truths that are here this weekend, Father. May we all leave a little bit different than when we came in. Amen. So it was about 30 years of my life I lived as an atheist, diehard atheist. I went to a public school where there's a couple of chairs up here if somebody wants to come around to them. Are you saving that one? Okay, perfect. There's one chair up here. I grew up in a public school where I was told Darwin answered everything. We're great cosmic accidents. My further proof to that about the whole public school thing is last year I went, I was a youth pastor 2 years ago, and I went to support my students graduating. I had about 5 students that were graduating. And had it not been for the fact that it was the valedictorian that was saying it, and I didn't want to be disrespectful to her moment because that was a very important moment, if it were anywhere else, I would have leapt up and went, whoa, 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 whoa. Because she's given this really nice talk about, you know, how important her mom is and all that stuff. And we're all like, woo, in tears, you know, it was a great talk. And then she shifts and she says, the truth is that we've learned here in our education is we're all just stardust. Well, how are you going to, like, have a motivational speech when you just finished saying you're all a big, great big cosmic accident with no ultimate purpose? And, man, I was sitting in my seat just going, like this. And so after, a long story short, I was hooked on meth because of different reasons. I was about 105 pounds. I was living in a dead man's home that hadn't closed the state yet and some couch cushions in the corner of a room. Had I had a gun, I would have killed myself. I really would have. I was down and out. But I went home to, I left my wife and my son. I mean, I was just, life was over for me. I went back to my house that night. I had a random chance. I went back to, that is random chance. I went, no, it is not, now that I think about it. Went back to my house and I sat there and I did this. I was staring up through a ceiling at a God that I didn't think existed. Because again, I grew up as an evolutionist. I grew up a diehard militant atheist. If you told me that you were a Christian, it was game on. We were going to have a battle and I was going to win. I thought Christians were dumb, empty-headed, don't ask questions sort of. That was my view on Christianity. And so I went home that night and I started just cursing out God. I said, you little, I called him all the names under the sun because I was mad. You know, I wasn't taking responsibility for why my life was where I was at. I was blaming something and God seemed the most fitting. And my argument was this, why would you create me and leave me to this? That was my argument. So finally I said these magic words. This was my altar call. I said, if you're God, do something about it. I woke up the next day. Meth addiction was gone. Everything that made me ceased to exist. And I was the person that I am today. And over the past 15 years, I first sought after Islam. We were talking a little bit. I first sought after Islam because I thought, well, they've got to know the truth. They blew themselves up into buildings. I sought after Buddhism. I started studying world religions, trying to figure out which God miraculously delivered me. And Jesus was the only one standing there the whole time going, bring it. Bring your questions. Bring your doubts. Bring your concerns. I can handle it. And so I became a Christian, not because it felt good or I was in the Mickey Mouse Club and, you know, we put a check in the box. I'm a Christian because of its truth. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to talk about, you've got two competing worldviews. You've got Darwin and you've got Moses. Both of them made statements about our origins. Both of them did. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to put up statements directly from Darwin and the Origin of Species or a couple of his different things. And then I'm going to put up quotes by Genesis, by Moses, who spoke, what about God's opinion on this whole thing, right? We've got two opinions. We've got God's and we've got Darwin's. And what I want to do is I want to use modern science now because, see, Darwin, to his credit, didn't have modern science. He didn't have that. He was going off of the science he had available to him at his day. He even said, one day, my theory will be proven right, because we'll keep on digging and we're going to find the transitional links that we need to find. So I'm going to put up different things. We're going to start with the question of origins. How did we get here? According to Darwin, this is out of Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection. He said, although much remains obscure and will long remain obscure, and by the way, I've got ADD, so I will come back around to my point if I get off track, but I was listening on the way up here to a debate between Richard Dawkins and John Lennox at Oxford. And Dawkins kept saying something very crazy. He kept saying, Dawkins, if you don't know, is the world's leading atheist when it comes to public view. He kept saying, the origins is so simple. It's such a simple thing. It's such a simple thing. I kept waiting for the simple explanation. If you're going to say it's simple, please explain the simplistic nature of it. He never would. And when finally got to the point of answering, he goes, well, nobody knows. Now, this is back in the 1800s. He's saying the same thing Dawkins is saying today. We still don't know about our origins, yet they're simple. Excuse me, if they were that simple, why not explain them? That each species has been independently created is erroneous. I am fully convinced that species are not absolute, but that those belonging to what are called the same genera are lineal descendants of some other generally extinct species. He's talking about transitions, that we all started from goo, and then a single cell amoeba, and then we started, and you've got the tree of life, according to Darwin, that everything comes back to common ancestry. That's why I don't ever use that argument, well, if monkeys and humans all evolved, why are monkeys still here? That's not what the argument says. Argument says we come from common ancestry, that both chimpanzees and humans both came from a common ancestor, not necessarily that humans came from chimpanzees. That's you'll bury yourself if you're trying to argue with them. Genesis 1:21, God created all of the creatures of the sea and every living thing with which the water teems that moves in it according to their kinds. Everybody say kinds. I'm also a pastor, so I'm going to get you to like repeat a word because I think you have to do that as a pastor. I don't know. Everybody say kinds. Kind. And every winged bird according to its kind, right? God made the wild animals according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to its kinds. Is there a pattern here? Darwin's saying we all came from common ancestry, and then we split off in these transitions going left, right, until we come up with all these different species. Moses is saying God said he created all of everything according to its kind, this one after its kind, this one after its kind. No crossbreeding, no transitions, just kind after kind after kind. And when he says it about five or six times, you start paying attention going, okay, I get you, God. So that's what we're going to look at. We want to discover truth, though. Truth. How many know that's an important thing? I love Frank Turek's talk this morning about relative truth and how to know. I mean, I love that. We want to discover truth. So I'm going to teach you, I would consider probably, out of this whole entire conference, this is probably going to be the most foundational thing you're going to learn this entire time. I would put $100 on that. Are you ready? Everybody take a deep breath. Out.
It really is a big bun. It's a very big bun. Big fluffy bun. It's a very big fluffy bun. Where's the beef?
Sorry, but there's a lot less beef on a lot of bun.
Where's the beef?
At Wendy's, we serve a hamburger we modestly call a single. And Wendy's single has more beef than the Whopper or Big Mac. At Wendy's, you get more beef and less bun.
Hey, where's the beef? I don't think there's anybody.
You want something better. Your Wendy's kind of beef.
Everybody say this. Where's the beef? Where's the beef? Seriously. When you go and somebody's trying to prove a point to you, like I said, Dawkins kept saying the answer is very simple, simple, simple. Show me the beef. Where's the beef? You can't just make a statement and say, hey, this is true because it may, yes, ma'am, there's a seat right up here. You can't just make a statement, throw it out into the air, and expect that because you said it makes it true. Show me if you want me to buy your hamburger, where's the beef? How many of y'all remember that commercial? Those were great commercials. All the old timers were like, yeah, I remember that commercial. There was a whole series of them. I used to play all of them just because I enjoyed them so much, but for sake of time, I took them out. Where is the proof? That's the question. Where is the beef? How are you? Where is the beef? Everybody say, where's the beef? That's what we're going to ask. So when we look for, you can sit right here. You're good? It's a very visual presentation. Let me turn the TV around for you. I can hold a mirror up while I'm talking like this. So here's the thing. We're going to look at, this is not a Christian source. This is coming out of encyclopedias. This is coming out of, this is the Britannica over here. This is coming out of secular sources. This isn't Christian sources. And this is the supposed dinosaur family tree. And right here, right here, right here, and right here, you're going to see these areas where the proposed transition happened. Okay? That's huge. If we've got transitions, then I'm going to have to change, because again, I'm not a Christian because it felt good or because it was a Mickey Mouse Club experience. I followed the truth, and the truth led me to Christ, and the truth led me to Genesis all the way through Revelation. That's where the truth led me. So I want to know truth, and I want to say, show me the beef. And so when I take away this tinted areas indicate solid fossil evidence. So the red is what we actually have. That's the beef, right? What happens when we take away all of the bun? We don't have any transitions whatsoever. All we have is lineal descent, one kind after its kind after its kind, just like the scriptures say. So Darwin says we've got transitional links. Moses says we all came from one kind. If we look at the solid fossil evidence, because we're not. If this was a fossil, it's not like I have my creationist fossil and then there's the evolutionist fossil. We all have the same fossil. It's a matter of looking at the evidence. If I put back their supposed thing, well, that sounds great. You can draw a picture all you want. But until you show me the beef and show me that there's no evidence for it, we're going to go a step further. This is getting into humans. Again, this is 2012 Encyclopedia Britannica. This is not a Christian source that I'm doing this with. This one cracks me up. This is the temporal ranges. This is the inferred relationships of the green dots. Inferred means it's inferred. There's no beef to support it. It's an inferred relationship. This is where it's funny, because if I take out the inferred relationships and we just look for where's the beef, everybody say, where's the beef? Here's the beef. You've got lineal descent and a whole bunch of floating question marks. This is what Darwinian evolution still to this day has, is a whole bunch of question marks in regards to transitions. They don't have the transitional links. They don't have them. Carl Kirby, if you haven't seen, he's got a presentation called Human Evolution, Is That All You've Got? Everybody write that down. Human Evolution, Is That All You've Got? And it's from Carl Kirby, from Reasons for Hope. Juan Valdez is not the coffee guy. He's actually the Spanish lead speaker over here. He's part of Reason for Hope as well. Human Evolution, K-E-R-B-Y. Look that video up, and he's going to break down transitions of the link. And I'm not going to blow it. You watch it. And what he does is, it's cool because he starts off and about 5 minutes in, he goes from this point forward in the entire presentation, I'm not going to bring up another Christian source again. It's all going to be their own information that we're going to look at. And it's phenomenal. So let's do one more. Just to beat a dead horse. There's a tree diagram linking human species. Dotted bars indicate tentative time regions. The broad outline of the tree is established, but new discoveries may alter the proposed connection. They're still looking for the new discoveries. When I take away the proposed connections, I've got lineal descent with a bunch of question marks. Again, which one is true based on the evidence? You can say what you want. I can call myself a pink unicorn. That does not make me a pink unicorn. If I was a pink unicorn and I could prove that to you, that would make me a pink unicorn. That would be the beef. You can't just say that we all came from these transitions without it. This is funny. I find this stuff humorous because I have to laugh. I wasted 30 years of my life as a diehard evolutionist, but I didn't look. I just took for granted, like, hey, you know, they said it, it must be true. Critical thinking has to be a part of what we're doing. So 1983, Dr. Gingrich, he pens Pachycetus. This is the first whale. And this is the picture. And I love when you go to museums and they have these storyboards of, you know, at 2 o'clock, Pachycetus would chase in the dawn of the day and he would chase to the west the only two-finned fish. I mean, they make all this stuff up. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing information you've got. But where's the beef? The beef is you got a couple pieces of jawbone. That's all you have. This is in 2001, nearly a whole skeleton was found. Does that look anything like a whale to you? That looks like that. Now, a funny story, over at the Fernbank Museum in Atlanta, I took my wife there on a date. We go through one of their main exhibits. It was this whale evolution thing. And so we're going through, and Pachycetus is standing there, and these people are going, that's amazing to me. It looks like a wolf. I'm thinking, maybe it's a wolf. I don't know. When I look at the beef, I see not a whale. I see a wolf. But according to what they said, we emerged out of the sea. We grew legs. And then we got tired of being on the land. So we went back into the sea. And so the wolf, Pachycetus, goes back into the sea and turns into a whale. Y'all don't believe me. This is real. This is what they believe. And yet I'm trying to tell them that the blood of Christ covers their sins. And they're like, oh, that's so far-fetched. I can't even understand what you're saying. I'm like, but come on. It gets even better. This is Amblycetus. This is the walking whale. This is the evolutionist model up here. That's what you'll see when you go into the museum. Here's the actual bones that were discovered, and the red bones were found 5 meters above the rest. How do you make a connective point when they're 5 meters above the rest, first of all? But did anybody notice the massive missing link in this entire equation down here? Where's its hip? There it is. They don't have it. It's a great thing for them. They can draw it facing backwards because they need the legs to start to develop backwards into fins. They don't have the hip. How can you tell me what the position of the leg is if you don't have it at all? Show me the beef and I'm going to show you this. However, but you can go there. That's what they're going to show you. And I'll guarantee you, if we had that whole skeleton and we had reverse pivoting hips that were starting to develop, I may actually start to lean towards that and go, well, because again, I'm not a Christian because it felt good. I'm a Christian because I followed the facts. If I go here and I see that, I might actually start to follow that. But the point is, they don't have it when they show the beef. But you get this nice picture. At 3 p.m., he loved to go and play in the West Waters. How do you know? You don't know anything about that. You're making that up. So the question of random accidental mutations, this is the whole entire basis of Darwinian evolution. Darwin says this in The Origin of Species. Can it then be thought improbable, seeing that variations useful to man have undoubtedly occurred, that other variations useful in some way, each being in the great and complex battle of life, should sometimes occur in the course of thousands of generations? He's talking about random accidental mutations. This is how, just in a nutshell, this is how, well, let me give you the nutshell. Preservation of favorable variations and rejection of injurious variations I call natural selection. This is what you'll find as, it's called 1.4.1, the premise to Darwinian evolution. In a nutshell, as random genetic mutations occur within an organism's genetic code, the beneficial mutations are preserved because they aid survival, a process known as natural selection. So you've got a blind, unguided, accidental process that mutations occur. And I don't disagree with micromutations. Everybody hear me. We witness micromutations all the time. I'm not disagreeing with micromutations. What Darwin's proposing is that micromutations happen by the billions. And of the billions of micromutations, there's a process called natural selection, which chooses the most favorable mutations and applies them going forward in the species growth. And it's all about reproduction. It has nothing to do with anything except for survival and reproduction. If you can survive and reproduce, then it was a favorable variation and they keep it. So that's what he's saying. A process known as natural selection. These beneficial mutations are passed on to the next generation. Over time, beneficial mutations accumulate and the result is an entirely different organism. I reject that wholeheartedly. That's called macromutation. That's a massive jump from one species to another. And again, we've already looked at the transitional evidence. By this point, we should have so many transitional evidences, it's not even funny. We've dug a lot since Darwin's day, and we have none. And yet Dawkins will sit in a debate and say, but we will one day know, because it's going to be a simple explanation when we find it. No, right now you don't know. It would behoove you to say, I don't know. Christian, some of the times you come to an apologetics time, you learn a whole lot of stuff. I'm going to teach you the best answer that you can ever give somebody. If you don't know, say this, I don't know. And then go get them an answer and come back with that answer. And when you do, you will have earned a respect level with that person higher than anything else. And you've opened the door to share the gospel with them. I promise you it works. Over time, beneficial mutation, not just variation in the original, but an entirely different creature. Whatever. Anyways. Moses says this. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. It's done. Everything that should have mutated into different species, if that's what you call it, is done. God created them and they were finished according to their kind. I was asked yesterday, were insects a part of the original creation? I said, yes, because Genesis says he was finished. It was done. Everything that was done. It was finished. So yes. Well, they're the scum of the earth. And I thought, well, they may be, but we're talking about the fallen world. That's why insects are now. They probably, you know, smelled like roses and ate, you know, little plants or something. I don't know what they did. Thus, they were complete. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all of his work. So again, we've got two competing statements. One says that there's these mutations that create different kinds, which don't happen because we've already looked at transitional evidence. Moses saying, look, God told me how he did it. He said he did it and he was finished. And so we're going to look. What happens when we see that? What do you think? Does everybody know what that is? For me, it's called envy. I have no artistic ability at all. I wish I could do that. That's chalk art. Sad thing is, man, it'll wash away in no time when the rain comes. But for a minute, that is incredible stuff right there. I mean, this guy looks like he's sitting on a ledge, and he's not. He's supposed to be like sitting on the chin. He's not. That's chalk art. Now, how many of you would believe if I told you this? Here's how that formed. Over hundreds of rainstorms and wind and sleet and hail, some kids spilled boxes of chalk on the ground. And the wind and the rain and the hail came down and modified the chalk to create these patterns into this picture. How many of y'all would believe that? Good. I'm glad nobody's hand went up. That would have been really awkward. We all would have stared at you and like, really? Actually, I usually have that one person like me. How about if I told you millions of boxes of chalk with millions of gallons of rainwater falling with hundreds of mile an hour winds blowing over hundreds of thousands of years? Would you believe that could happen? No. We're all rational thinking people. We know that in order to create art, it takes a mind to organize the colors into patterns and sequences in order for that to happen. That would be the first part is Darwin's explanation of random mutations, randomly coming together. But people, we all know that doesn't work like that. That's not how things come together. We know what Moses said about things are actually organized in a very particular way. That's where we get this. So if we know that this could never accidentally happen, everybody agree on that? There's no way that's going to accidentally happen. That takes an artist to do that. If we know that, when we see this, what do we think? What is it? Whoa! How do you know that?
Biology,
of course. Those are butterfly wings. Sandved travels the world taking pictures of nature. And that's not the only ones that have those anomalies in them. You can go to sandved.com and you can get your name, like a poster with your name put in butterfly wings. And you can actually choose from a couple of different letters on each one. There's a couple of different choices. Now, you can call that complete coincidence and say, wow, that's amazing that those randomly organize themselves in that way. Or you can say, no, there's a mind who's manipulating creation for our benefit. He said creation is one of the ways you'll know his existence, that no man will be without excuse. You can't look at that and tell me that that was randomly placed. Again, Darwin says everything happens by random, unguided, blind processes. Moses said, nope, there's a direct mind behind everything that's put everything in place. You're not convinced yet. Let me give you these. How about the set of eyes on that butterfly? Or the happy face on that? Or heart? The choir down here. Can anybody show me a mechanism within evolutionary theory that can arrange colors into patterns to make art? Anybody? You know why I love this argument? So this is one of my favorite arguments, this one right here, because atheists hate it. There's no known mechanism that can control the bringing together of certain colors like a mind can. If it's an accidental process, how in the world are you getting... Look at the detail in those eyes. How are you going to do that? There's no known mechanism to do that. Random mutations, I disagree. I'm seeing stuff that's completely ordered. Look at that flower. Yeah, put him up. This guy, excuse me, could you show me where the chocolate is? And he's like, no, but if you had a cigar, I would gladly smoke it. I mean, come on. Again, within plant life, how are you gonna explain random mutations that create this stuff? I got more. I've been collecting these for years. It looks like a little giraffe or a deer. I don't know. That one's just spitting his tongue out. That guy's just mad about bad hair day. And I'll be a monkey's butt if that's not an orchid that looks like a monkey. I mean, would you look at that? Again, look at these. What about that? That's an iris. It looks like that dove that's carrying back the fig leaf. Again, I'm asking you the question, could random mutations do this? Or do we have a creator that's so awesome that he can't help just being like, wow, like we stare at things. I mean, you see a waterfall or a sunset or something. There's a grand artist behind everything we see. I got more. Monkeys in a barrel? Anybody? Monkeys in a barrel? Those are orchids again. Maybe they look like a monkeys in a barrel. Look at all these monkey orchids. Look, that's Uncle Si's first picture in first grade. And he's just mad to be here. Look at that dude. He's like, again, explain to me a mechanism that can create this by accidental, random, blind processes. It's not possible. And remember, we're trying to compare Darwin's words versus Moses. What about a ballerina? Some death skulls. Look at this. Look like swaddling little babies. That is legit. All these pictures are legit. I looked at it. I was like, that's got to be Photoshop. That's actually a flower. Look at these birds. I mean, it's just, these are flowers. It blows my mind. I mean, everywhere you look, C.S. Lewis said this in his book, The Business of Heaven. If the solar system was brought about by an accidental collision, then the appearance of organic life on this planet was also an accident, and the whole evolution of man was an accident too. If so, then all our present thoughts are mere accidents, the accidental byproduct of movement of atoms. And this holds for the thoughts of the materialists and astronomers as well as anyone else's. But if their thoughts, i.e., their materialism and astronomy, are merely accidental byproducts, why should we believe them to be true? Why? If it's just a byproduct of smashing atoms in your brain, which don't even get me started on how do you explain consciousness in and of itself, if that's all it is, why should we even pay attention to what they're saying? Because that makes no sense whatsoever. It's just a byproduct of naturalism. I see no reason for believing that one accident should be able to give me a correct account of all other accidents. It's like expecting that the accidental shape taken by the splash when you upset a milk jug should give you a correct account of how the jug was made and why it was upset. We have to look for answers because there is a person, God, who gives answers. If he was mysterious and didn't answer these questions that we all come to him with, I don't know that he would have the characteristics to be God. That would be kind of evil, to leave people to wonder for themselves whether or not anything's true. What about this is a huge question. If we're going to mutate, we've got to go in a particular direction. Darwin says natural selection acts by the preservation and accumulation of small inherent modifications, each profitable to the preserved being. So he's saying, look, everything's going this way. We've got to go from goo, from prebiotic soup with non-living chemicals, to our first amino acid, to our first protein, into our first twisting of protein into a cell, from a single cell to a multicellular complex organism like ourselves. Everything is moving in a productive manner going forward. That's what he's saying. Genesis 3:17, cursed is the ground because of you. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since it from it is where you were taken. Moses is saying, look, there's a problem here. God has cursed it. This is what Genesis says. Or Hebrews, in the beginning, the Lord laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you remain. They will all wear out like a garment. They will perish, you'll remain. Everything's going to wear out like a garment. Everything's wearing out is what Hebrews says, according to what Moses had talked about back in Genesis. So here's the thing, the second law of thermodynamics. It's almost an inarguable law. Everybody accepts this. And it's not just true for this room or for you. It's universally true. Every portion of the universe suffers the second law of thermodynamics, which is also called entropy. It's kind of its code name or its nickname. What it states is very simple. Everything goes from a state of order to disorder. Say everything. Everything, including the evolution of life, goes from a state of order to disorder. This is not a Christian law. This is a scientific law. Perfume dissipates. If you spray perfume in the air, give it 30 seconds, it's going to smell less. Give it 3 hours, you won't even know it's there. Because it went from a state of ordered chemicals to a breakdown in the molecular structure to the point where it's not there anymore. Springs uncoil. You know, you get car springs and you have to replace them every now and again because you hit the bumps in what was originally designed. That spring's going to start to wear out and it's going to lose its coil and you're going to have to replace it. Watches What time is it? Oh, we got plenty of time for me to tell this story. My son's not here. I'll embarrass him. I get him one of those gyro watches where you can see all the gadgets, and he's in the room and he's doing this. I go, what are you doing, dude? Because I'm trying to wind my watch, because he knew the perpetual motion wound it. And so I was like, dude, just pull the little thing out. And he's like, oh, man. I thought, dude, I'm so glad nobody else was around to see that moment until I share it every time I get to this point. Watches unwind. I mean, watches unwind. Magnetic fields break down. I mean, that's just the truth. The sun's energy is burning out. These are all things that we know to be true. Again, where's the beef? The beef is showing us that everything, you're dying. I hate to tell you that, but you're dying. From the moment you were born, you begin to break down and get sick, and you begin to die from the moment you were born. That's just how everything works. There's nothing in this world that doesn't go from a state of order to disorder. Now, again, how are you going to go from non-living chemicals to the first amino acid to a protein to a single cell to a multicellular complex? Everything's traveling in the positive direction, whereas second law of thermodynamics says, no, everything's traveling in the reverse direction necessary for evolution to be true. Here's how mutate. Now, forgive my oversimplification of this process. Seventh grade, this is a seventh grade example, and it's just so that we can all understand. So this is going to be a very simple explanation, but this is how a mutation works. And that this is true science, and we're going to ask Dawkins about his opinion here in a minute too. you got this dude who's got LLSS, long, long, short, short. That's what that stands for. That's his genetic code. Well, he has a son, and the son moves over to Canada, and he's like, whoo, I'm cold. He goes through a mutational process. I don't discount mutational processes. That's not what I'm saying. He goes through a micromutation. He loses one of the S, which causes him to have two longs and only one short. He's got longer hair, which is an adaptation in order for him to be more comfortable and successful in his environment. I'm there. My dad moved to Florida. He was living in Connecticut forever. Moved to Florida like 12, 15 years ago. If it drops below 65, he's like, I'm like, dude, you used to, like, you know, 30 below zero. He's gone through a process of change. He's adapted in that process, and now he can no longer withstand those cold temperatures like he used to. So then he has another son, and this son moves over to Texas, and he's like, woo, it's hot here. So he loses an L and has two S's, so he's got a little bit shorter hair to make the adaptation more comfortable for him. I agree with that all day long, and that's what we observe in science. Has anybody noticed a pattern, though? Every time it's come at a loss. It's coming a loss of information. What used to have four elements now only has three. This guy has a son. He moves to Mexico, and he's like, oh, I'm very, very chilly. And so he loses all his L's. He has two S's. He has really short hair. His adaptations made him very comfortable and successful for his environment. But now he's only got two. There's no known, hear me loud and clear, there are no known processes to add information to the human genome, or any species genome for that matter. Mutations come at a cost every single time. Every time. Doesn't matter. Every time an observed mutation happens, here's where you'll get tricky with evolutionists when you say, it's not beneficial. No. I didn't say it's not beneficial. That was very beneficial for him and super beneficial for him. I'm not saying beneficial. I'm saying that you can't add information to it. Because they'll say, well, it grabs the most beneficial element of that mutation. Okay, great. You proved that. I see the beef. But while it grabbed it, it lost two other particles. You're done. It's losing information. You can't go from non-living chemicals to a single amino acid to a single protein, repeat that process hundreds and hundreds of times in order to make the right left-handed amino acid stick together to form the first protein that will twist itself into a cell. You can't do that because entropy says everything's breaking down, and mutational processes say you're losing information. This is why I don't get. I wish everything would go to homeschool and everybody would teach homeschool. That's my new position, but everybody can't do that. I couldn't do that. I'd send my son through public school. I wish they would teach evolution and intelligent design. Let the kids critically think about it. Let them figure out what they think is truth. Because when I look at this stuff, I kick myself that for 30 years I was a militant atheist. Because when I look at this, everything that we know about science now goes in a different direction. Let's get a professional opinion, though. Let me make sure I turn this up. I want to make sure you hear it. Let's ask Richard Dawkins about mutations and see what he has to say.
Can you give an example of
wait for it. It's not edited. This is.
Can you just talk about that?
Just hold on a second. Okay, I'm sorry. You asked me for the beef. We ought to give a 1 Peter 3:15. Y'all heard it this weekend. Heard it a bunch of times. First, set apart Christ the Lord in your heart. That portion of the verse gets left off on every apologetics thing, and it drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. First, set apart Christ as Lord in your heart. Because if that's not the case, you have no right doing the second part. Always be ready to give a defense to anybody who asks for the reason for the hope that is in you. Always be ready to give a defense. When you're asked about the most crucial thing, mutations that add information, you should be able to give a defense. And then the last part, this is the other one that gets left off. Do this with gentleness and respect. Apologetics can be a dangerous thing. You can find yourself beating information over somebody else's head, and I'm telling you, that will never gain an occupant to heaven. That'll push him away. Set apart Christ as Lord in your heart and do it with gentleness and respect. And that little middle part that's always on every apologetics thing, don't forget that part either. But don't forget those first and last part. So the question of creation of complex organs, that's where it starts to really break down, because Darwin says, natural selection acts by taking advantage of slight successive variations. She can never take a great and sudden leap. which kind of defies some of the stuff we've already seen about macro mutation, but I digress, but must advance by short and sure, though slow steps. If it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, here's a part. My theory would absolutely break down, but I can find no such case. So what he's saying is if an organ can be shown to exist that didn't come about by a long process of very slight modifications and variations, then his entire theory breaks down. To suppose that an eye with all of its inimitable contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distances, for admitting different amounts of light, and for the correction of spherical and chromatic aberration could have been formed by natural selection seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree. He's admitting that. But again, in his defense, he didn't have the technology we have nowadays. Moses said this, "For in 6 days the Lord God made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them." He finished. He made an eyeball and he was done. That's what Moses is saying. So again, we have two competing worldviews. One says it's over a period of massive amounts of slight variations, and the other one said, no, God said he did it all in one time and he's finished. So let's look at the evidence. If you take a rat trap, y'all ever seen this demonstration? It's called irreducible complexity. If I take a rat trap and I take just this hold down pin down, will it work? If I remove it, will it work? What if I took the base off but I had all the other parts? Will it work? No. What if I took this spring off? Would it work? Or the actual part that comes down, would it work? What if I didn't have any, forget the trap itself, what if I had no bait? Would it work? No. You have to have the entire rat trap all at one time. All at once, you have to put the whole rat trap together in order for it to work. If you reduce it by one element, it stops working. Period. It's called irreducible complexity. It's complex enough that irreducible by one part, it doesn't make any sense. Let me just go back to this. To suppose that an eye, and he said this, if it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which was not possibly been formed by pneumatic, my theory would break down. So let's do this. If we've got the rat trap, what about an eyeball? It's the exact same thing. The human eyeball has a cornea, pupils, an iris, a retina. It's got the muscles that go along with it, the optic nerve, the orbital muscles. There's over 30 more basic parts just to make it work at all. If I remove this optic nerve, can they see anything? What about the lens? What if I pulled the lens off? It would get everything, would be able to get down to the actual pupil itself or the cornea. What if I took the iris off? What about the fact that an eyeball sends the information upside down and your brain has to interpret it and flip it back around? It has to all be there, all at the same time. Reduce an eyeball by one part. What if you took the muscles out? The eye would just go like this and flop down. Every single part of an eyeball has to be in existence all at the exact same time in order for it to work at all. It's irreducibly complex. It's complex enough by irreduced by one part, it stops working. What did he say? If it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed that didn't come about by slight successive numerous variations, my theory would break. Well, according to this, his theory's broken down. And yet, I'm telling you, I'm just going to be honest. Can I be real transparent with you? Not only is evolution still a major battle against the Christian faith, it's starting to steep right into Christianity. It's called theistic evolution. God used evolution to do it. That throws Genesis out the door faster than anything I've ever seen. And y'all, we have to take a stand. This is not a fleshly battle. We're battling spiritual battle here against doctrine, against the principles of Scripture. We've got to be able to give a defense to those who asked us for the reason for the hope that is in us. We have to. And here's my closing. Let's just say everything I just presented could be proven false, that all that could happen, just as Darwin said it. Here's the big problem. Here's kind of the big elephant in the room. There's not enough time to do it. Everybody show what, say, where's the beef? Okay. In 1982, Mount St. Helens erupts, March 19th. It cuts a 140-foot deep, 17-mile-long canyon, 1/40th the size of the Grand Canyon, in a matter of hours. I've been to the Grand Canyon. I spent 8 days going through 197 river miles with some of the world's top geologists, and we went layer by layer by layer. But when you first get in, you get in like at the shore. The Grand Canyon hasn't started yet. Actually, technically, the Grand Canyon doesn't start until you head west. You go through the Little Canyon, then you go in the thing. I spent 8 days looking at the geology there, studying it backwards, forwards, looking at fossil evidence. There's seashell fossils riddled all the way through the bottom of it. How in the world do seashell fossils get there? Last I checked, the ocean's nowhere near the Grand Canyon. But what we're told is that the Grand Canyon was cut by a little bit of water over a long period of time. That's great. You can say anything you want. That doesn't make it true. the beef, the only beef we have that I'm aware of, is in 1982, we saw a miniature version of what happened back in Noah's flood. When the waters receded back off the earth and cut the Grand Canyon in a very short amount of time, we see evidence of that right here. This is the only thing we have to hold on to scientifically. It's the only thing we have. We can go through geology after geology, and I get that. But what I'm telling you, the only thing that we've... Isn't observable science the science we want more than anything else? We want observable, repeatable science. The only observable science we've ever discovered was in 1982 in Mount St. Helens, cut of Grand Canyon, a little mini Grand Canyon. Here's just some pictures of it. 1/40th the size of the Grand Canyon cut in several hours. Not weeks, months, years, or hundreds of years. In a matter of hours, 1/40th the size of the Grand Canyon. Check that out. But we observed that. We saw that. I just took a group of students down to Providence Canyon in lower Georgia, where about 80 years ago, bad management practice for water runoff from farmers caused all the water to run to one place. 80 years ago, it was flat. There are stories of young students skipping over the little gully on their way to school. I went there the other day. It is beautiful. It's my second time being there. It's gorgeous. I mean, it's one of the most pretty things. It's probably 1/40th the size of the Grand Canyon, and it's got all these colors and the layers and stuff. It's ginormous. And it wasn't there 80 years ago. Just water from runoff cut something that's an example. Again, if you want the beef, if you want to see provable science, if you want to see observable science, this is as close as we're going to get. I'm closing with this. There's a picture of the Grand Canyon on the left. That's the little Grand Canyon on the right-hand side. There's me sitting in the... That's why I have a beard. You see how like weird that looks right there? Look, I have like face right there. It's the strangest thing. That's Andrew Snelling. I took a picture in front of this because this is bent rock. This is the great unconformity right here. This is sedimentary rock versus creation rock right here, right there at that moment. That was kind of cool. But I took a picture of this bent rock. How do you bend rock? Can anybody bend a rock? Because I'd love to see it. What happens if you were strong enough to bend a rock? It would snap, right? It's not going to bend, but there's folds. Look at this. Look at this fold going all the way through, and you can see it in multiple layers. There's folded rock going through, supposedly, hundreds of millions, if not hundreds of thousands of years apart between these two layers that were supposed to be there. How are you? If one layer was folded, that's pretty impressive. To fold two layers or three layers at the same time is very impressive, because how would you do it unless it was all soft and hot and pliable at that same time? It's the only way you're going to do it. Once concrete, rock, once something like that dries, you can't bend it without cracking it straight down the middle. You're certainly not going to get... And those bends are all over the place. Again, if I can poke one hole... And the universitarianism, did I say that right? Whatever that word is. It's a big long word for those who say that, man, it's billions of years old, 9.6 billion for the earth and 14.3 for the universe and all that stuff. If I can poke even one hole in it, we need to go back and reassess how we're analyzing data. I can poke multiple holes in it. Look, here's more bends from all over the world. Polystrate fossils, these are fossils that go through multiple layers at a time. Again, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because even if everything that Darwin said was true, they don't have time for it to happen. You would need countless billions upon billions upon hundreds of billions of years for all of those billions of micromutations to happen over and over and over and over again for natural selection to choose the most inherent variation that's profitable. And you'd have to have an insurmountable amount of time in order for that to happen. And I'm proposing, I don't think it's been but about 6,000 years. I really don't. I die on that hill, too. Polystrate fossils, they go through multiple layers at the same time. How's a tree going to get buried in this layer and fossilize, and the remainder of the tree stick up for, let's just say, 2,000 years? That's a very, very soft analysis. It's 2,000 years it sticks up and buried again, and then another 2,000 years buried again. Now, the first part of that tree that's unburied is going to be deteriorated by weather, by bugs, by the sun. Everything's going to get to it, and it's going to completely break down. But yet we see polystrate fossils going through multiple layers all over the place. Everywhere we look, there's poly. They found a baleen whale standing on its tip of its tail, buried in what supposedly was growing 3 centimeters per year in this salt patch, and they found it standing on its tail. How are you going to stand it on its tail if it's... You're going to tell the whale, hold there for just a second while we bury you 3 centimeters at a time. Come on, that's just nonsense. Again, show me the beef. When I look at the beef, it's very easy for me to turn around and just come up to this analysis. There are absolutely no evidences for transitional lengths, only questions. Again, Carl Kirby, Human Evolution, is that all you've got? That's that thing I told you to write down. Go and look, and he absolutely annihilates, using their information, the entire argument that we may even conceptually have a link. It's just not there. So we don't... What's that? Carl Kirby is the guy, the gentleman who does it.
Carl.
And then the title of the message is Human Evolution, Is That All You've Got? Very, very powerful. The appearance of organized information in the genome refutes evidences for randomness. We don't find randomness in creation. We just don't. When I look around, I love being a Christian, y'all. It's like my favorite thing in the whole wide world. It's been such an eye-opening experience to go from a drug-addicted, hopeless atheist to, man, everywhere I look, I see the fingerprints of God. I'm a pastor because I love people, even the jerks. I just love them to death because, man, we're all created in the image of God. And I believe, you ever seen that Santa Claus movie where Jack Frost was so like, the whole movie long, and at the end, the little girl gives him a hug, and he turns from blue and frosty to, oh, he's all warm. That's what I see people when I look at people. I don't care what mood you're in. If I give you a hug, you're going to melt, and because we're all created in the image of God, all right? That's what I see when I look around. I see the fingerprints of God everywhere. I don't see randomness. You don't look like stardust to me. Y'all look pretty cool. Observable mutational analysis reveals that mutations are headed in the wrong direction. I don't know how evolutionists get past this. Between entropy and mutational analysis, I don't know how they get past this one. And last, irreducible complexity puts a nail in the coffin of Darwin's own admission. Irreducible complexity absolutely puts it down. You can't reduce an eyeball by one part and have it work. And according to him, his entire theory breaks down. We should just be able to close the book on this and say we're done. So that is why I put Moses versus Darwin. That's why I put their two statements together. That's why we're looking at modern science to see who's telling the truth. And as for me in my house, I will serve the Lord according to the basis of the evidence that we have. Amen? I don't know what time it is. Time for a couple questions if you want, or we can eat lunch.
Well,
lunch is at 12, technically.
Where on the web is that video of Dawkins being stumped?
Everywhere. If you go to YouTube and you put Dawkins... mutational information added to a mutation, just put that, those keywords, you'll find it, it'll pop up. It's in a longer interview, and he, in his defense, he tries to come back and give some sort of half explanation as to why he couldn't explain it. It's basically, he keeps coming back around to, we will figure it out one day. We'll figure it out one day. One day we'll figure it out. I'm sorry, y'all, every day I wake up, somebody dies. We just lost Nabil Qureshi. I mean, a massive warrior in the faith. He's passed away now, just a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. Y'all, people are dying all the time. We don't have time to wait until there's evidences that are supposedly going to pop up. We need to know now what the truth is. Anybody?
What's that canyon in Georgia you were talking about?
Providence Canyon.
Providence
Canyon. It's in, oh gosh, where is it? Way south. West Georgia. I live in northeast Georgia, about 40 miles north of Atlanta, and it takes us about 3 hours to get there. Well worth it, though, man. I mean, it's my second time going. It's a long trip. I mean, it took us 7 hours round trip to go there and back, and you spend about 3 or 4 hours there. But I mean, it's to go once and just go, whoa. But to think 80 years ago, that canyon wasn't there. And then if you really want to have some fun, go into the little guys that sit behind the counter and sell stuff in the little gift store and ask them about it and start to challenge, like, well, how could that possibly form that quickly? I mean, doesn't the Grand Canyon take millions of years? And watch them just start to go, they don't know what to do with it. Because it's again, it's beef right in front of you. For me, it correlates directly to the flood. I mean, the Cambrian explosion is all of a sudden the sudden appearance of all of these fossils all at one time. What's that? For me, they were buried in the reason why they show up in the same strata all at the same time. For me, this is just me. Yes, in creation. Yes, going back to creation. But the reason why they were all buried in order for us to find the fossil evidence that we found is we had a worldwide flood that buried it said every high place was buried. So that's my correlation to the Cambrian explosion is, yes, you're right, going back to the original creation, and God said it is finished. I would imagine so. I mean, that's because we've got creation of all the sea and air on day five, and then on day six, every creature that walked on the... What's that? We still have... I mean, you can still go and buy those little... What are those things called?
Trilobites.
Yes. You can still go buy trilobites, which are uber simple organisms today. The funny thing is they say they're dinosaur eggs, like from that time period. I'm like, I don't know how you get there, but you can still buy trilobites. Have you ever raised them? They're very cool. Or how about sea monkeys? Is that what you call them? We call them brine shrimp because we feed them to fish, but little kids would grow them. When I was a kid, I'd raise brine shrimp, which is another simple organism. Those still exist today. I mean, we've got very complex organisms, and then we've got really simple organisms that still exist to this day. Yeah, and they said, no, what's the full title? And he was like, what he's saying is if you haven't seen it, Dawkins was like completely ridiculing Christians because they couldn't name all the books of the Bible. And so the Christian turns around and goes, well, what's the original name of Darwin's book? And he goes, The Origin of Species. And he goes, no, what's the original full title? And the irony just did not escape me, trust me. That was brilliant. Whoever asked him that, I don't remember who that was, but that was brilliant. I'm looking forward to that debate tonight.
How does Darwin deal with male and female and developing two things that have to be compatible at the same time?
Phew, that's a million-dollar question. They go with, what is that called, asexual, is that what it's called? There's certain organisms that are still asexual that can reproduce in and amongst themselves. They're sea life. And they're saying that the sea life originally started that way, where the original organisms were asexual, where they had both parts and could impregnate themselves and then follow through with that pregnancy, giving birth. It's a million-dollar question that never gets asked. If one man somehow evolved from a single cell to a complex organism, let's just say man, and jump over the hundreds of countless of species that had to get to that point, what is the likelihood or the odds that a female with opposing parts that happen to fit really well together and do lots of cool stuff when it comes to reproduction, that never gets talked about? Because I think for me, I just go back to, I try and go back to the beginning of abiogenesis, where I look at, it's funny, if you had told me 15 years ago I would study biology, I'd be like, no, I'd have no interest in doing that. But after becoming a Christian and trying to figure out how do we get here, why are we here, and where are we going, I went back to biology and abiogenesis, into that prebiotic soup, looking at the reality of, is it possible at all? So for me, I don't hover in there, but it's a million-dollar question that you could say that with dogs. How did two dogs happen to replicate, you know, because it would be a replication process of the mutations in a completely opposite manner in the way that they could be male and female. What's that? Came first. Had to. Yeah, I'll die on that hill too. Had to be a chicken. You can't have an egg without a chicken. That goes back to DNA and RNA. You've got to have DNA to have RNA. If you don't have DNA, there's no RNA. If you have RNA, there's no replication. You had to have DNA completed. That's what I'm saying. Everything we look at has to be a completed process in order for life as we know it currently to exist at all. It has to.
Is there a way to get your slideshow, some of those illustrations?
Mm-hmm. Do you happen to have a flash drive on you?
Maybe.
If you do, I'll just dump it on. I've tried putting them on a Dropbox, but it doesn't. I never have a whole lot of success with that. Plus, my Dropbox ends up getting full in like 2 seconds, and then I'm like, Yeah, I'll just dump it on there. If anybody wants it, if you've got a flash drive, I can just dump it on there.